So in this section, we'll be looking at what opportunity there might be for primary care to be a driver in developing an understanding and involved in the applications of genomic medicine. So in primary care, our exposure to genomic medicine and its application could occur through a number of ways. Jude, could you just start off and tell us in what ways you think this might be relevant for us in primary care?
Well, one of the main ways that patients come is asking about their family history and concerns that they have. One of the cornerstones, really, for dealing with genetic and genomic issues in primary care is taking a family history and trying to identify patients who will be found to have a genetic basis for their condition. So they may present for family history. We've already talked about genomic testing and genomic testing through the NHS and the 100,000 Genome Project. Are there any other ways that genetic testing could occur or patients could come with results?
So those who seek testing through private or commercial genomic testing may actually be an important mechanism for patients to seek DNA testing. And we might be the recipients of the information from the parents and have there will be a need for us to develop strategies in how we sort of manage this information. The other important aspect really is the range in which genomic information will be used, whether that's in prevention, screening, diagnosis, directing treatment, information from specialists, or anticipating the ethical, social and legal applications, which we'll discuss later on. So it sounds quite challenging and onerous, Jude, but how are we going to access this, the information necessary to enable us to support our patients in practice?
Well, as we talked about in the first section, in general practice, it won't be needed that we have an in-depth understanding of genomics or genomic technologies, but we do need to know that we can get the information within the consultation when we need it. So it will be really helpful if certain resources could be developed, such as decision support tools or guidelines, disease summaries, or even virtual advice from specialists. And we use many of these resources to support our clinical care of patients in other clinical areas as well. We started by talking about family history. Imran, just tell us a little bit more about that.
So family history has traditionally been used to inform us about patients or families' risk, genetic risk, for rare genetic disorders such as Huntington's disease. And there's been good epidemiological studies which have demonstrated family history as a major risk factor. For example, the relative risk of type 2 diabetes varies between 2 and 4 for a single affected first-degree relative and more than 10 times for two affected first-degree relatives. So an accurate family history is really important and will provide a cornerstone for disease risk assessment. In disease risk prediction tool developments, the family history can also help to improve the accuracy of disease prediction. And this could work very well in terms of genomic tests, in synergy with genomic test results. We will also be using gene variants in addition to family history to stratify risk. And family history together with gene variants provides interpretation of genetic test results, particularly those variants which have got unknown significance. So, for example, the NICE familial breast cancer guidelines provide a good example of where risk is based on family history and where genetic testing is incorporated, which then allows us to risk stratify our population into low population risk, moderate risk, or high risk. And each risk group will have clinical recommendations. So, Jude, how do we manage our patients who are subsequently found to have a genetic basis to their condition, such as familial breast cancer, for example?
Well, I think we need to go back to your point about risk stratifying patients. In primary care, our main role at the moment is to identify patients who have a risk of a condition similar to the general population or above that population. I'm going to carry on using cancer as an example of a common complex disease. Around 5% of people who have cancer will have a genetic basis, or what we think of as a more traditional single gene basis for their condition. An example of this is people who will have a pathogenic variant in the BRCA1 or the BRCA2 genes, which I think is an example very familiar to most people within primary care. When patients above population risk are referred to secondary care, for instance, the breast clinic, they are divided into moderate and high risk for the purposes of determining screening recommendations and potential risk reducing measures. They are also further stratified into those who may be eligible for genetic testing for a single gene condition, and then these are referred on to the genomics medicine centres. Identification of these patients is crucial because they have a significantly raised risk and may be offered a targeted prevention or risk-reducing treatment such as surgery and increased screening, but it also has implications for other family members as well. I've used cancer as an example, but this applies to other common complex conditions such as ischemic heart disease and familial hypercholesterolemia, MODY or mature onset diabetes of the young and diabetes, and there will be more examples emerging all the time. I've talked then about germline DNA testing, which means testing of the constitutional DNA, DNA present in all of our cells. But another form of genomic testing is that of tumour DNA or somatic testing, and this has got important implications for cancer detection and treatment as well, and is really leading to the emergence of the new discipline called precision medicine. Imran, could you just tell us a little bit more about what that term means?
So it's really interesting because now we will have a genomic signature for a tumour, which can then be used to make a precise diagnosis, and it will enable us to have more accurate prognostic and better tailored treatments. So, for example, the use of treatments such as Herceptin in breast cancer treatment and BRAF inhibitors in advanced cutaneous melanoma, for example. Treatments can also be based on germline genomic information. For example, PARP inhibitors are more efficacious in the treatment of ovarian cancer in individuals who carry a BRCA gene mutation. So in primary care, it's likely that we're going to see patients being offered targeted treatments, and the number of exemplars will continue to grow over time. Genomics is going to sort of enable us to tailor our cancer screening programs as well, such as colorectal cancer, for example, through risk stratification at a population level, in the same way that we described for breast cancer. But to do that, we're going to require large-scale data collections to acquire the relative evidence base. At the moment, there's no population stratification of breast cancer with common genetic factors, and the evidence is still accruing. But the use of variant sequencing or even a panel of gene variants as a genetic test for affected and unaffected relatives requires an acceptable body of evidence, which may not be available at a level required for clinical utility. Dude, what about rare diseases? Where do we stand with that?
Well, so-called rare diseases, they affect less than 5 cases per 10,000, but collectively as a group, they affect 1 in 17 people. So we will actually have a significant number within our individual GP practices. At least 80% of these are genetic in origin, and although the term rare disease is used, we will be familiar with many of these, including cystic fibrosis, familial hypercholesterolemia, hereditary hemochromatosis, and there are more and more examples. The 100,000 Genome Project, in its rare disease arm, is also looking at conditions such as Parkinson's disease, dementia, and many cardiac conditions, again, which we will have seen within primary care. The genomic testing will improve the likelihood of making a molecular and, in some cases, a clinical diagnosis. And as we understand more about the mechanism, it's going to give us an opportunity for greater understanding of the pathology and also treatment development as well. The UK Rare Disease Forum has recently produced a report assessing the progress made toward published recommendations of the rare disease strategy. And this report acknowledges the progress made in molecular diagnostics, including the 100,000 Genome Project, expansion of the newborn screening programme, but also highlights that much work still needs to be done. Again, how may this present with primary care? Well, people may come with results from themselves or results of a family member as well, and it's important for us to be able to help them to understand the result and the implications, also to coordinate their care, but it may have implications for their reproductive choices as well. We've talked about emerging genomic testing and increasing molecular diagnosis, which leads naturally onto us thinking about those who have a rare disease and who have been through genetics in the past but may need a reassessment. So we need to think about looking for clinical clues and consider whether patients would benefit from being re-referred to genomics medicine centres and benefit from access to new technologies and new testing. So we've given some examples there, which include prevention, screening, diagnosis, targeting treatments. Imran, can you give us any more examples outside the ones we've already talked about?
So prevention and screening is really interesting. And so, for example, in infection control, managing outbreaks such as salmonella and preventing spread and managing antimicrobial resistance could be really handled by the study of studying microbial genomics and serotyping bacterial genomes. So it's really interesting work. And in the study of infectious diseases, differences in RNA content between host and pathogens and limitations in starting material are factors that need to be taken into account. So this can then lead on to identifying novel drugs and vaccines. Genomics will also be of help in diagnosis with, for example, in cancer and the use of biomarkers following, for example, protein studies. And that's exemplified in the study of prostate cancer. We may be classifying diseases in different ways and subclassifying based on the genomic signatures. And this includes, for example, with diabetes, where there is a condition called maturity onset of diabetes in the young, which when identified can drastically improve with targeted treatment. And similarly, managing obesity and hypertension may change over time using new genomic information. Reproduction is a really interesting area, and the NHS screening program are incorporating testing for cell-free circulating fetal DNA as a potential screening tool for Down syndrome, as well as Pateau's and Edwards syndromes. And it's going to be really interesting to see some of the ethical and social implications of such testing. And then genomics can also be useful in terms of helping to direct treatments. So, for example, identifying family members at risk and profiling them and treating them. So, for example, in the case of familial hypercholesterolemia, as we have discussed. And then there are sort of examples of genomic medicine within many other different specialties. And I'd just like to highlight here the work that was done by the, facilitated by the PHG Foundation, who are based in Cambridge, who worked with the Royal College of Physicians Clinical Champions in 2016. And they cited different exemplars of where genomic information may be incorporated into different specialties. Jude, you are also on that working group, and I wonder whether you could just start off with some examples that you are aware of that was exemplified by this group.
Yes, and I think what was really interesting, what was particularly interesting about this from the primary care point of view, is we will already be seeing some of these examples. We will be seeing patient letters coming from secondary care with some of these examples included. One example is testing for TPMT activity. It's an enzyme, and if there are variants in this enzyme, it's associated with toxicity when people are given azathioprine. So this is relevant for dermatology and for gastroenterology. In respiratory medicine, adverse drug effects to anti-TB medication are seen in individuals with specific polymorphisms, and whole genome sequencing is now being used to diagnose TB and determine drug resistance profile also. Something we've been familiar with for a very long time in primary care is the risk of hearing loss in patients who are given a minor glycoside within ENT context, and one in 500 individuals have a mitochondrial mutation which makes them more sensitive to the ototoxic effects of aminoglycosides. There are many examples in cardiovascular medicine as well, such as the diagnosis of hypertrophic cardiomyopathy and arrhythmias such as long QT syndrome as well. This section is aimed to give an overview of how genomics issue is impacting on primary care and also a window into secondary care also. The next section we're going to talk about and explore more the ethical implications and also explore further exemplars of genomics, including commercial results and how genomics may influence prescribing in the future.